You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Chipped ahead and out by Arvidsson. Trying to start Moore, he does. 2-on-1 with Deneau. Moore moves in. Deneau scores!
And welcome, everybody. Hello. It's another On the Sly. Rob Brender alongside Jim Fox. So much to get to on today's show because we're right around the All-Star break, and that is the unofficial midway point of the season. I think everybody, Jim, considers the All-Star break the halfway point, even though, especially this year, because of COVID-19, we have teams that have played many more games and in some cases many fewer games than the rest of the pack. And so it's not exactly midway for everybody, but I think, Jim, this is a good chance for us to kind of settle in, talk about some of the things that we've seen so far this year and give our midseason report card.
Yeah, I think it's the first substantial break in the season. So it gives, you know, Christmas you had it, and this year at Christmas we had an extended break, but that was due to COVID and some postponements and those types of things. But yeah, you're right. Get to the All-Star game and the All-Star break, and everyone's kind of, I think they have a pretty good idea of what's going on or what they expect to go on the rest of the way. I think this year, again, because of what you were just talking about, there's probably a little uncertainty on how teams are going to be able to make up all those games. We know what the schedule is now. Is it going to be too congested? If you're on a roll and you're just going to go through those games and you're playing 7 games in 15 nights and it's going to be great, or if you're on a downer and it really hurts you at the time because everything's crunched together. So still a long way to go, but yeah, where you see the light at the end of the tunnel now.
We most certainly do, for the first time in a while. And there's a lot of stuff when you do a midseason report card that you can touch on. We're going to try to condense this to about 5 or 6 different topics that we find to be the most interesting. We'll go through some of the surprising teams, some of the disappointing teams, and some of the teams that we think are kind of in the mix here, and also touch on an MVP and a rookie of the year. And so let's get started. Let's jump into this because it has been a lot of fun to watch. There are a lot of teams that have come out of nowhere to be really, really good. A lot of teams that have disappointed us so far. We thought they'd be a lot better. Let's start with the most surprising team. Who has surprised you the most so far this season?
Well, again, I think when we use that term surprising, it probably denotes a positive. They've exceeded expectations because I know another category we have is going to be disappointing. So, yeah, to me, Nashville stands out with a group of players that were uncertain of what was going to happen, especially Johansson and Duchesne. And were they going to be able to refocus? And, you know, John Hines, their head coach, has done a phenomenal job of bringing those guys back into the flow because they were on the outside. They really were. And they're the on-ice leaders of that team. Forsberg, yes, and Yoshi. But Johansson and Duchesne, to me, they have to be involved, and they've come together. You know, they're at 644 winning percentage right now. So that, how that's come together, again, they'll probably have decisions to make. I think Forsberg's an unrestricted free agent. And, you know, are they going to be happy enough? I don't think the contracts of Duchesne and Johansson are attractive to anyone. So that's been it there. I think Anaheim, improvement was expected. But when I take a look at something that just devastated their team a year ago, special teams, as we're looking right now, they're 8th on the power play and 7th on the penalty. I mean, that has turned their complete outlook around. The Rangers, always love them because they're exciting. I love their style. I like their approach. I think it's up-tempo. I think it's attack. I think it's going after it. You know, Fox back on the blue lines doing a phenomenal job. But the reason I say surprising to me is, and it's followed through this year, that their numbers, when you look deeper into the analytics, and especially their 5-on-5 numbers, they're awful. They're not that good at all. Goal differentials and things of that sort. But special teams and goaltending has allowed them to be where they are. But it's a little bit surprising to me that they're at 67.4% winning percentage. So that's not bad at all. If they even come close to sustaining that, they're in. But Rob, if I can go with the winning percentage is only 600 right now, but I think it might surprise. I think the Calgary Flames to me are surprising. They have a lot of pieces. I think we know that Daryl Sutter can bring the group together. To me, they're surprising at when they're at their best, how good they are. I mean, their absolute best. I'm sure they've had some ups and downs. When they're at their absolute best, that's better than I thought they would be. You know, Monahan, was he going to be traded? Gaudreau, can he coexist with Sutter? I mean, all of these questions were surrounding this group. Markstrom, was he going to be this good in goal? I mean, Anderson, Rasmus Anderson, he leads the D in scoring for that team. He's a plus 10. He leads their team in ice time at over, you know, 22 and a half minutes. So that to me is a group that they're just, they're doing it the Sutter way, which is contributions from everyone. But they surprised me when I watched them at their best. I think Markstrom leads the NHL 7 shutouts, right? So when they're at their best, they shut it down. And that's the most surprising to me.
Yeah, that's fair. And interesting, Mangiapane was so good for them early, and he fell off a little bit with the goal scoring, and still they've been right there in that mix in the Pacific. They've been very, very good. You're right. One team I want to throw into the mix as well. How about the Pittsburgh Penguins? You know, there was an expectation that that team was going to be pretty good coming into the season, but they had major injury issues. Sidney Crosby wasn't there at the very beginning. He had a wrist issue, kept him out about the first 2 weeks, I think, of the regular year. They were without Evgeny Malkin for the first 2+ months of the season. They had their fair share of COVID issues as well. So it's another team that kind of, you know, again, the expectation was fairly high because they're the Pittsburgh Penguins and they're such a well-run organization. And yet, with all those injury concerns and with the main pieces, the key pieces, they were without Jake Guentzel for a while as well. And he's been such a great scorer for them. And yet they've stuck in that mix in the East. And they're certainly going to be a playoff team again this year. But right there near the top, let's see where they are actually right now. They are sitting just below the Rangers, 61 points. The Rangers have 62. So just another team to throw into the mix. But I'm right there with you. As far as Nashville goes, very interesting, Jim. You brought up some names. Did you know that mix of guys? I mean, they have so many players on that roster that I think a lot of people around the NHL have probably never even heard of.
Yeah, they've got some young kids, too, that have really stepped it up. And that's where, you know, you come out of nowhere and you're surprising. I think they're getting input from players they probably didn't expect at this point. So the development has been there perhaps a little bit quicker. With Pittsburgh, I think, yes, because of what's happened with injuries and a mass COVID attack at one point. But when you have Crosby, Malkin, Letang, the biggest surprise, I guess, is Jari, right? He has the most to prove. He had a really disappointing playoff last year, and many felt that he kind of cost him some games in goal. But this year he has been, you know, and for us with the Kings, we've been able to see them twice in the last little while. So it all points back to a guy that we won't get that into that today, but it points to Mike Sullivan, their head coach. I mean, he just seems to, man, if they're, I know we did a broadcast, I mentioned on the broadcast recently, I don't think there's a coach that has a better feel for his group of players. Like when they're doing well, how does he keep it going? When they're not doing well, how does he make adjustments? He has a great feel for that group of players. And I don't know if that's tangible. I don't think you can put that into a number. But I think that's why I've seen his name on the top of a lot of lists for the coach of the year.
Yeah, that's fair. He does a wonderful, wonderful job. You're right. And one more thing on the Rangers, too. I want to ask you this. You've seen the Rangers now several years, obviously, in a row. There was this rebuild process that they had started a couple of years ago where they sent out the letter to all the season ticket holders and they let them know, hey, look, this is going to be a process now. We're rebooting this whole thing. That was only a few years ago when Jeff Gorton was running the show. And now you look up at the Rangers in 2022. And they're legitimately a Stanley Cup contender because the goaltender's great and Fox is great. You mentioned all the different players that they have that are contributing right now. Is it as much a surprise, forget even about just this year, but that they've been able to turn this thing around so quickly to be this good?
Well, it's the surprise to me is Kreider on top of the NHL in goals. I mean, right at the top.
Yeah.
That's the – everyone I've talked to around the Rangers just says that this is – so he's made a mental adjustment. He's found a way. I mean, he's not even a veteran. I mean, he's deep into his career. But he found a way to bring consistency to his game. And many times, if not all times, that is a mental issue. You just figure something out, whether your preparation gets a little bit better or more efficient, or whether your understanding of the league, or it all of a sudden clicks into you, where am I successful on the ice? Where? And then you get to that spot more and more and more. But again, I'm a little concerned. I'm just concerned with their deeper numbers. That's all. They're a little bit off, and I think that might show through in the end.
Yeah, we'll see. So was there number one? Is there a number one in that pack for you? Was it Calgary? Was that your number one?
It's Calgary again. It's Calgary just because when they're at their best, that's how I'm rating this surprising factor. When they're at their best, they're dominating.
Yeah, that's fair. The Calgary Flames. I'm right there with you as far as an expectation level to where they are right now. Boy, they've been awfully good. Okay, so that's our most surprising teams on the positive side, as you said. How about most disappointing teams so far?
Well, the first team on the list that I wrote down are the Montreal Canadiens. Now, having said that, I was able and fortunate enough to, you know, go deep into the playoffs last year with NHL Radio. And in my opinion, they had no business getting to where they did. So to me, that says, okay, you know, they're not that good. Now, they went all the way. They found a way. They got there. They, you know, lost in five in the final. But I just didn't see it. And so for that reason, they're not disappointing. But then when I look exactly where they are, I mean, they are dead bottom. But, you know, you lose Weber, you lose Price, you lose Deneau. And then, you know, there you have, talk about it, right? Center, D, goalie. And, that's where they're hurting. So, but I still sense a disappointment. Edmonton, just because of the star power, I get the feeling that they're going to get there at some point this year. They're going to turn it around. But they've been disappointing that they have not found the recipe or ingredients to get the supporting cast that they need. Because their salary structure means that there is going to be a huge gap. There is going to be a huge gap between the top dogs and the support guys. That's just the way they're built. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do they make the decision to go with a support group like all defensive players and let Dreisaitl and McDavid take, you know, or do they go all offense with those support players and just run and gun it and outscore it? You know, I'm not sure if they've figured out a way to do that yet. And I think they will, unfortunately, because they're in the Pacific. I think they will play a lot better in the second half than they did in the first.
Why do you think they went from being so good the first, let's say, month to being what they've been over the last 2 months?
And I hate to do, I'm not a numbers guy. If anyone watches, I'm not a numbers guy. I really don't. I'm getting more into it, but their power play was so dominant. It was 50%. You know, every other power play. They were, what, 16-4 and something when they started the season. I mean, and that was it. Now, you know, you find a way to contain the big boys and you get it done, but that's an example there of how, you know, the numbers tell you that they're not going to sustain that. They're not going to sustain 50% on a power play. So when that drops off, how much effect did that have on their group? You know, they lost. They have not. Mike Smith has not been there, which is not unusual. I mean, he's just, can you rely on him? No. And Koskinen has been okay, and then he's been bad. But then, you know, again, the bad goal hurts you more than the big save helps you. Mm-hmm. He's that type of goaltender where everything's going well, and then boom, he just, you know, allows the goal that gets you. So they're, but you know, they just drop off in the power play. That's the reason.
Yeah, wonder if Evander Kane can be that missing link.
He can. I mean, he gives you more balance now. He gives you, you know, your top four, you know, with McDavid and Dreisaitl and Nugent Hopkins and now Kane. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
But to me, the most disappointing team is the New York Islanders. And maybe it's a little bit of the new NHL. Haven't done a lot of dig deeping. I thought I started these numbers to creep in a couple of years ago, but they have the fifth best goals against average in the NHL. Normally that puts you, you know, that puts you as a top 10 team in the league. Normally, I think it's just kind of dropped off lately where some teams have found ways to outscore their mistakes. And certainly I would never put the Islanders in that category coming into the season. So I wouldn't expect them to outscore, but I just felt, I know they start with the first 12 on the road or whatever because of the new building. You know, but Barzal is the leading scorer. He's 9 goals, 27 points. There's only 3 players with 20 points or more. And that's just, they've hit rock bottom offensively. And I guess for that one, it's, I thought they would be able to find a way because of their structure, but they haven't. And to me, that's the most disappointing so far.
Is that a legitimate excuse? You mentioned the 12, I think it's 12 games in a row. You're right, on the road to begin the season as they were waiting for their arena to be finished. Is that a legitimate excuse at this point, or should that excuse be kind of out the door? It's been, what, 2 months now since?
Yeah, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and they were right around 500 when they came out of that, the first road trip. So it's not like that killed them. I think they were one game under. And going in, you say, if you come out at 500 after a trip like that, you're fine. You're happy.
Yeah.
And they were right there. And, you know, just the inability to find anything consistently, putting the puck in the net.
Yeah.
And again, that, you know, because it's an offensive issue that I'm talking about, that's another reason I think it just, because of the category, it just, you know, you want teams to score more. I knew the Islanders weren't going to be that type of team, but they had to find a way. And right now with 36 points, they're 17 points out of a playoff spot. 17 points.
Yeah.
You know, for a team that was one goal away from making the Stanley Cup final last year.
It seems like the East is pretty much set when it comes to the playoff teams at this point. It's going to be hard. I think Detroit sits in the spot that would be right on the outside, but there's really no expectation Detroit's going to be there quite yet this year. And so it seems like the playoff teams are set. And I know the folks on the island, when they started to make a little run here the last few weeks, thought, okay, we have a chance maybe to get in, but very unlikely, right, Jim, at this point that they have any shot?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I'm just looking at it right now. They're 7 points behind Boston, but Boston has 4 games in hand on Detroit. And that's your 8-9. Then there's another, you know, another dip to Columbus. You dip another 5 points down to 41. And then, you know, now you're talking double digits to get in. And that's just not going to happen.
One last thing really quickly on the Isles. You mentioned their leading scorer is Matt Barzal. There was an expectation for Barzal that was so high since he was drafted in the first round a few years ago. Yes, he's leading the team in scoring right now, but the numbers aren't very good. You put him on any other roster and he wouldn't be anywhere near the top for the most part. Has he done enough in your eyes? What do you see in his game at this point?
What I see is this, is I see a player who's right at the top of the league in possession time. So the puck's on his stick more than just about anyone in the league. And historically, it's been like that. And you can see it because he's able to leave his own zone. He's builds up speed. He's quick. He darts in and out. So defenders can't really get – so he gets into the offensive zone and he holds on a lot. If you take away his options, then is he a scorer? And I'm not sure if he is. So when you take away his pass options, then he becomes a player that has the puck all game but doesn't have any production at the end of the game. And I'm not hanging it on him. I'm hanging it on the guys away from him to get in better positions or to finish off a little bit more, because I don't think you can argue with his numbers and how he has the puck and how much he has the puck.
Fair enough. One more team I wanted to ask you about really quickly as we finish off on the most disappointing team so far for the first half of the season. What about Winnipeg for you? Obviously, Paul Maurice steps aside, which surprised almost everybody as the head coach. He's a very well-liked guy. They are right now on the outside looking in. They look a little flat. Talk about a team that's not scoring much. Kyle Connor's been great, but otherwise, offensively, they're not getting a lot. They have a very good goaltender in Connor Hellebuck. What do you think the reasoning is that they've been this, for lack of a better term, flat so far?
Yeah, it's, you know, it goes back a couple of years when they were devastated with defensemen leaving and injured and contracts and things of that sort. I see, you know, when Paul Maurice, before he left, the one thing he talked about was this. He said he was kind of taking it for granted that they were a playoff team. And that's okay. But he said, we are a rush team. And when the playoffs come around, rush chances go way down. That's just the way teams approach it. Now they're able to scout you. Now they're able to slow you down. They're able to take away. And he said, in that category, rush chances, that goes down in the playoffs. So he was trying to make those changes regular season, which makes them less exciting, but maybe more efficient. And I'm just wondering, and he went public with those statements. If there's any coach you want to listen to and perhaps learn about his feelings on what he feels is important, but then how he communicates that to his players, I think Paul Maurice is right at the top of the list. His communication skills are through the roof. Makes it understandable for everyone. I'm not sure if that was the one reason, but I think he felt that he was – he pinpointed everything on that. If we can't become more of a well-rounded team on how we attack, then I've got to get out of here because I told everyone, I put it on the table. It hasn't happened. So are they in between? That's where I'm getting to. Are they in between? I remember Larry Robinson telling me there's the best time to play a team is when they're changing their system. You know, if you get a new coach and they come best time, because you're in between. And if you can attack that in between, then that one split second of hesitation kills teams. And perhaps that's where they are right now.
Yeah, which is not a good spot to be in, of course. Okay, so the New York Islanders, your most disappointing team so far this season. Let's talk MVPs. We always enjoy that, individual performances. You look up and down the league, there's some interesting names at the top of the leaderboards when it comes to points. How about for you, MVP so far?
Well, I'm going to start it off with one guy that I never put it this way. I very rarely, 99% of the time, I never put a goaltender into the MVP category. They have the Vezina, and that is chosen by the GMs who select the goaltender they feel is the goaltender they would want to have. So that kind of, that's a separate award. But with Shesterkin this year in New York, because I mentioned all the numbers just don't look that good. And then you look at his numbers and you go, okay. That's value. That is covering up mistakes that your team is making. And so I put him into this category just as an afterthought. Again, if I had a vote, I don't think I would, just because he might be number one on my list for Vezina. But the names that come to mind to me, and of course, when you have this type of a category, there's going to be, you know, talk about a million players. There's only two that come to mind for me, and they're offensive-minded, but it would be Jonathan Huberdeau.
Very good.
For the Panthers.
Very good.
And my Russian accent is not as good as it should be, Alexander Ovechkin. Reason being with Ovechkin, again, value. You lose Backstrom for just a vast majority. Backstrom's, he's played 12 games this year. And isn't that the guy that feeds Ovechkin? Well, you know what he's done this year? He's changed his game. He's at this stage of his career, he's adjusted his game to no longer just be the one-time shooter anymore. You know, he'll be the fixture on the power play, but he's not scoring a lot of goals that way. He's scoring way more goals. The numbers tell you inside, inner slot, getting to the net, rebounds. He's making, you know, primary assists on plays where he's the first, you know, the passer, the instrumental passer. So, he has changed his game so he could provide more value to his team than what they need right now. Then the raw numbers at 29 goals at this point just jump out at you. And only, you know, you have Dreisaitl and Kreider that are right there. Matthews is right there. But those are great names, right? Those will all be on the top. I just put Ovi there because I think he has adjusted his game again to provide value to what his team needs right now to win. Mm-hmm. And He's not going to be the one-time guy anymore because Backstrom was out of the lineup. Maybe he'll get back to that second half. Maybe he'll have 8 goals on one-timers in the second half. Maybe he'll have 12. But he's done that for his team to get wins. With Huberto, you know, Barkov is another guy, but he's missed a whole bunch of games. Huberto's plus 20, which on a run-and-gun team like Florida, you know, you try to look for holes in their game and you'd say they're just not going to play some defense. It's not going to be effective, but they're on top of the league, basically. The team has taken on his style, I think. Now, I think there is a valid point to be made whether that style will be effective in the playoffs. You know, will it? Are they a run-and-gun attack team like we were talking about with Winnipeg? Are they a rush chance team? Are they going to be able to be tempered when it gets to the playoffs? I think that's something to consider. But I think the team has taken on his personality and his style. And to me, that might be the definition of value. He's able to exude something that his teammates pick up on and then to become successful. And then the numbers, they tell the story.
He's been wonderful. Would he be number one then above Ovi? Is he your choice for now?
I'm right there. I'm right there. It's difficult. I would expect Florida to be where they are more so than even Washington. And Washington's a little bit lower. So for that reason, I would give a little bit more to Ovechkin because I didn't expect Washington to continue to win games like they have without the players they were missing.
Absolutely. One name I want to throw in there for you that I'm curious what your thoughts are on. How about Nazem Kadri? You look at Colorado, obviously the best team right now in the West. They've been wonderful, but they've had their fair share of COVID issues, just about like everybody else, but it's affected some of the big names. McKinnon's been out with injuries at times. Landeskog's missed game with injuries, and Kadri is having the year of his career to this point.
Difference maker, yes. Most valuable player, not yet. Because I look at the numbers as far as just flat out offense. And, you know, 6 points behind him on the same team is Rantanen. You go a little bit deeper, not too much. You have Landeskog. Then you have Makar back on the blue line. Then you have a guy, McKinnon, like you say, he's missed a lot of games, but points per game. So I unfortunately for me, a guy like Kadri gets lost in the mix of a whole bunch of great players. And then to me, that lowers his value number because other guys could do it and other guys can help. And I think the two guys I mentioned with Huberto and Ovechkin, they've done it without the help, or they've done it without the expected help they were going to get.
Sure. If we had a category maybe for underappreciated or undernoticed, things of that nature, maybe Kadri fits in that category at number one.
He has exceeded the offensive numbers are there, and he's jumped into a position because McKinnon goes down. He's had to do, but the thing with Kadri this year, when McKinnon's in, he's good, and when McKinnon's out, he's good.
Right. So, I wonder if part of it, Jim, too, is that he's kind of pigeonholed into that guy that picks up those major penalties and gets suspended it. Right.
Yeah, for sure. That's held against him. But, you know, I think he's at the stage now. He knows. And if he doesn't, I mean, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. Talk about timing. But if something that he does in the playoffs takes away, you know, he loses it again, everything he's done in the regular season will go away. And the list will be long for potential teams to sign him, but it'll be shorter. I think he'll figure it out.
No question. By the way, you mentioned the goaltender Shesterkin. One quick thing on him. If you were starting a team right now, you're the Rangers, you have the Rangers roster, Fox or Shesterkin, who would you choose?
I would go with Fox.
The defenseman.
Yeah. Only for one reason. Name.
Name. That's it. It's all about the name. I should have known you would do that. All right.
What's in a name?
What's in a name? Exactly. Well, it's a good name. All right. So Huberto for Florida and Ovi are your kind of co-MVPs, I guess, so far this year. How about the rookie of the year? What do you have for the rookie of the year?
Yeah, there's a lot to digest here. A lot in the rookies. The first thing I want to say is just how I've listened to many people discuss this category before. And, you know, they say, well, this guy's only 18 and he's up against a 25. To me, that doesn't matter. If you're eligible, you're eligible. Or the argument is, and I think these can be used as tiebreakers. You know, if you get down and you have a couple players, you're right there. Yeah, okay, then maybe use it as a tiebreaker. But, you know, what position they play? Oh, it's harder to come into the league as a defenseman or as a goalie than it is as a forward. I'm just looking at how well the players have done. That's what I'm looking at. And I have probably a longer list here. I'm not going to go through, but I mean, in all honesty, I haven't seen a lot from some of the players I'm talking about because a lot of them are East Coast. But Anton Lundell plays in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 32 points. He's plus 26. He plays almost 16 and a half minutes as a forward. So, I mean, he just yesterday as we tape, it's February 1 as we tape. I guess record, right? Is that what we say now? You don't say
tape. Yeah, record more than tape. There's no such thing as, does anyone use tape actually?
I'm aging myself. Tape stuff.
Real to real.
Go on. I remember the reel to reels.
That's right. Eight track in your car?
But he had five assists last night against Columbus.
Yeah.
So I would have to say I haven't seen him enough to give him a nod here, but I'm seeing enough as his numbers, and his numbers are pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Zegras, of course, in Anaheim. High-end skill, no question. Brings the flash, and that usually catches attention. But he's considered more one-dimensional than most of the guys right now. And that's okay. You know, you'd rather have a guy that can score and teach him the other things as opposed to a guy who does all the little things and then try to teach him how to score. No, it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. But he's minus 11 on a team that's done very well. But again, there's, you know, the 5-on-5 numbers will probably be down a little bit because they're so good on special teams. So, but you know, his effect on the game is there. The opposition has to watch him closely because he can make the play. He can, you know, game changer. The other guy that's, you know, of course, the two guys in Detroit, and that's where I'm going to the Raymond. Forward, more flashy, leads everyone right now in rookie points. But as we speak, one goal in his last 21. So he's really dropped off. Seen him play, great release on his shot, powerful skater. But again, there's just some holes there. The guy that I've seen only once live, but enough to see, to me, he gets almost. At this point, he's almost head and shoulders above everyone else in the rookie race. And that's where it's Sider of the Red Wings. 29 points. He's minus one on a team that's, you know, right at 500 right now. And they're relatively young. So to me, that's a good number.
Mm-hmm.
Because he plays 22 and a half minutes a game. But the thing that is you capture immediately is his presence on the game. He's physical to the point where you notice that physicality. He's not running around, so he's getting to be physical without getting himself out of position. He's able to quarterback a power play. So you're putting the physical together with the orchestration of a power play. But then I just, at the end of a game, you know, when I'm watching the Red Wings, I'm going to myself, who is that kid? I mean, he jumps out at you. And so for me, you know, I know I've gone over. There's another kid in Nashville, Alexander Carrier. You know, he's a D-man. He's plus 16. He's plus 13, I should say, but still a good number. 16 points. He plays almost 21 minutes a night. So just, you know, and that's, we were touching on that earlier, right? Why right. Nashville is where they are. And I think it's a player like Carrier who's done a, you know, I know the Jeannot is there too, who a forward who has more points, but I think impact on the game. But to me, it's Sider, head and shoulders. He just impacts the game in too many different ways, and he does so at a level which I think exceeds the others. So again, if I were to compare him to, say, like Zegras, high-end offense, he has the advantage there because his high-end is better than Sider. But then Sider he's just good at everything, and that's tough to dispute for me.
The Kings saw Detroit here in L.A., right, earlier on the season, and you guys have not gone to Detroit yet. Is that correct?
Correct. We play Detroit tomorrow, actually, as we speak.
Okay, there you go. In looking at that team, and I think the Kings won that game against Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. It was a low-scoring affair, if I recall. Yeah. So you didn't see that much in the Detroit team yet, and they didn't explode offensively in that game against L.A. Do you see signs that they're heading in the right direction because of guys like Sider? I mean, it's a long rebuild for them at this point.
Well, you know, they should be. They better be. But they still haven't been that team, right, where they've had the top number one, number two, number three. You know, they haven't had the hype, but they've had enough high picks lately to be there. But
again,
if you've never seen a game before and you go watch the Red Wings play, at the end of the night, you go, 53 was pretty good out there. Who is that? And you might not even say, who is that kid? I mean, he's a big kid. He's 6'4". You just say, who is that? Because his presence is noticeable.
Yeah. And the fans in Detroit hope that they have the next Nick Lidstrom. It's a long way to go before he gets there, but certainly they're looking for a great D-man. They haven't had one probably since Lidstrom. It's been a long, long, long time. So a number one rookie of the year, did you have a pick as number one out of that group?
Well, yeah, I'm going to slap you on the back of the head like Leroy Jethro Gibbs, because I've said head and shoulders above everyone else.
Who was head and shoulders? Sider. Okay. Sider's number one. All right. Fair enough. And I brought up a name.
You got a head slap there.
I brought up a name, by the way, that didn't qualify before we started this show. Ville Husso. He doesn't qualify because he's 26. Way to go. Way to be too old by a few months. Ville Husso for St. Louis in his first full year, quote unquote, in the NHL.
That's two head slaps then.
I know. He doesn't count. Yeah. 1.90 goals against because he's 26 years old, but he's been really, really good. And I didn't even know who he was until this year. And he's kind of supplanted as the number one goaltender. So Sider as the number one. All right. Let's take a look at the playoff picture as compared to expectations.
Yeah.
Jim, coming in.
That's my least favorite category we're doing.
This was Jesse Cohen's categories, by the way.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You know that.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things, and I'm going to be very short here. It's just the first place teams, Colorado, Vegas, Florida, Carolina. I don't think there's any surprises there.
No.
So those are your first place teams. So you knew they were going to be in the playoff picture. The Pacific is better than everyone expected for now. But, you know, regardless of how it turns out, you know, is it going to be five from the Central and only three from the Pacific? Right now, that's not the way it's lining up. But we expect other teams to get second half. You're still a long way to go, all those types of things. But the Pacific, no question, with the Kings, with Anaheim, and even San Jose have exceeded expectations. And, you know, are they going to be in the playoff mix? Now it appears like, yes, they will be in the playoff mix. And, you know, if I can, and we rarely do that, and even for the categories, but I stay away from Kings because we do enough of that on the air. But I think it's the road trip they're on now. When you have a letdown game in Philly, but then you bounce back with a very solid performance. I know it got away in the third period, but I thought the second period against Pittsburgh, a very strong team who are healthy right now with Crosby and Malkin and Carter down the middle. Then to bounce back and play a game like that, that puts them now, to me, again, coming into the season, borderline playoff team, fighting for a spot, right? The old cliche, they have to play important games down the stretch. When you see that bounce back on a road trip, it makes me believe that they have the necessary ingredients to be a playoff team. As you can tell, I'm not putting them there yet, but that's impressive. That's something that would not have happened last year. Would not have happened the year before, would not have happened even in the first 20 games of this season. And to me, that shows improvement. And if there's anything I'm happy about is the improvement factor. Game management early on, that's all Todd McClellan talked about. We're not managing the game well. Where certain circumstances arise and we're not handling it well. And then we lose. Well, B game, when we play our B game early in the season, no chance of winning. No chance whatsoever. Now you play a little bit of an off game, you get a point or you get a win, you find a way. So the improvement has been there. And, you know, right now the Kings, you know, on the blue line with Matt Roy out now and COVID, and you have Anderson, you know, now you're a thin group already is even thinner. Good signs for depth in the organization. So just so I throw that in there, just
that's fair. And I was going to ask you that. Look, we didn't include them in the list of top three or four or five teams and the most surprising, but they are, I'm going to ask you, are they a surprise to you with just where they are?
No, not just where they are. No, I think they're exactly where I thought. I thought they're going to be a 90, 92 point team, which normally doesn't necessarily get you in, but you're in, you're right on that cusp.
Yeah.
And I think they're kind of maybe a little bit ahead of that pace right now, but I'm going on improvement. We talk about it quite a bit. I know our producer, Jesse Cohen, talks about it quite a bit. Expectations frame everything that you think about. Well, my expectations were solid team, playoff team, maybe, but I am impressed with the steps and the improvement. No Edler after what he did early. Walker goes down. Doughty was out all the time. Anderson's out now. Roy's out now. Every team has done that this year, but I didn't know if the Kings were deep enough to get through that. And now I'm seeing the forwards, you know, taking an extra onus on them when the D is a little bit, let's make sure we do our jobs, a little bit more attention to detail without the puck. Let's do it that way because that's how they're going to win games. And I think that's what they're doing right now.
Since we're talking about playoff picture now compared to expectations, I'm curious, and I never asked you this, I don't think. What was your expectation for the rookie franchise, Seattle, coming into the year compared to where they are now, which is not very good?
Expectation was the Fanduel have no chance of scoring. And I think that's the way they selected their team. They went with more D, more. Now, again, they're the 2-for-1 deals that they were unable to make, you know, when they selected their team like Vegas did, meaning, you know, you don't touch this guy and we'll, you know, you got to give me something. If you don't want us to select, if you don't want us to pick this guy up, you got to give me a second rounder.
Sure.
You got to give me another player off your team, and then we'll talk about, okay. They didn't do it, but now I think they'll have some two or three or four players that'll be attractive at the trade deadline this year that they're willing to trade. So even though they didn't get the 2-for-1 at the time, I think they're going to turn around into more assets moving forward at the trade deadline. And, but no, I think they're, I don't know if I'm on record. I think I am somewhere, but I did not expect them to be effective at all.
Anywhere near Vegas and what they were when they were
not even close there. I expected them to be at the bottom, and that's where they are. Arizona's the one team underneath them right now, and I think those two are exactly where most people felt, or at least I felt.
It sounds like as far as the playoff picture now, you kind of thought that everybody that's in the picture for the most part would be in that mix, maybe outside of, you know, the disappointing teams that we talked about earlier on, like Edmonton, you probably thought would be a little bit better than they are right now. But otherwise,
but Edmonton's, you know, Edmonton's winning percentage is right there. It gets them in. The one team that just stands out like a sore thumb are the New York Islanders. Because they're, again, 17 points out of a playoff spot, I guess. And that's just too disappointing. And that's where, as far as playoffs, I think some teams would say they'd find a way to get in. They just find a way to grind it. They find a way to win 2-1 every night, and they just have not been able to do that.
Yeah, it's been really, really rough for them. And again, it looks like the Eastern Conference is probably going to stay the way it is right now with those top eight teams making it. Real quick, before we wrap up, we talked a lot about the West, and you see the West most often. Anybody from outside the playoff picture right now? Dallas, Edmonton, San Jose, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Chicago, Seattle, Arizona. Forget those bottom two for sure. Anybody that would shock you in any way if they made a run here and actually,
that's where we have, you have to regroup those as far as winning percentage, because some of those teams you mentioned are going to be in the top eight right now.
That's true.
So that's where this, when we come out of the quote unquote Olympic break, that's when we'll have a better understanding, of course, right? Because then everyone will be back to normal. Now, interesting thing coming up, it was just pointed out to me by Hoover, our producer at Bally's for Kings Games.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, by the time the Kings play their first makeup game, which will be the 15th against Edmonton,
mm-hmm.
Edmonton will have already played three games before that. So that's going to be a tough issue. When the NHL, I'm going back four, five, six, whatever years ago, when they came up with the 1 week break in the middle of the season for every team, the first year they did it, they just did it randomly. But then they found out that, you know what, competitive balance was affected because some teams were playing a team that, you know, was in the normal flow and they hadn't played in the whole week. So the Kings will find themselves in that position during the Olympic break. Will it help Edmonton to play those three games before they play the Kings and against a team they're battling for a playoff spot with, you know, head to head? Will that freshness be just a factor that comes through? Those are the things. That's where the uncertainty, which is the biggest word. We thought that the last couple of years would prepare us for the COVID-related issues. This year, uncertainty is still there because of the effect it had on the schedule.
It's going to be fascinating to watch it play out, the unbalanced schedule down the stretch and who plays well in those short bursts. You're right. It's kind of the unknown, the great unknown. You could be a great team and struggle because you're playing so many games. You could be a bad team and start to surge at that point, I guess. So you're right. That's going to be very, very interesting to watch and certainly will have an impact on the playoff picture. Okay. So to recap everything, I want to make sure I got it all right. Most surprising team for Jim Fox so far, Calgary. Making your way into where they are right now, playoff position in the Pacific. Most disappointing team, the New York Islanders. Your MVP at the halfway point, split between Huberdeau and Ovi. It's kind of a co-MVPs, I guess. Rookie of the year so far would be Moritz Seider for Detroit. And we talked a little bit about the playoff picture stuff as well. So
the only thing that I would just again get back is the surprising to me for Calgary, not surprising to me, that I thought they'd be fighting for a playoff spot or be involved in the playoffs somewhere. It's how good they are when they're at their best. Their ceiling is pretty high. Now, you got to get there, right? But when they've gotten there this year, they've dominated teams.
No question. Very dangerous team, certainly out west. All right, that's it for our midseason review. Jim, have a great second half of the year. We're going to do a lot more of these shows, but it certainly should be an enjoyable one. And with what you said about the Kings a few moments ago, it sounds like this might be a really fun one for us, especially here in L.A.
Yeah, let's just hope the consistency goes there. And again, that game management issue and the improvements they've made in certain areas. But the one thing I do know is that my golf game will be much better after the Olympic break than it is going into the break.
We'll see about that. One of these days, we have to actually hit the course together. All right, that's a plan. Jesse, you're invited as well. Jesse Cohen, our producer, can come along. For Jim, for Jesse, I'm Rob. That's our midseason report card. See you, folks.